Om sahana bhavatu, sahanao bhunaktu, sahaviryam karavavahai, tejasvinavatitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. From verse 234. Divichyabrantim ujjitva, divichyabrantim ujjitva, swam apyaganayan sada, chintayan sakshinam kasmat, chintayan sakshinam kasmat, shariram anusanjwaret, shariram anusanjwaret, divichyabrantim ujjitva, swam api aganayan sada chintayan sakshinam kasmat shariram anusanjwaret. It says vivitya in the Clinical Past Participle, vivitya, having done this viveka, this discrimination between the sakshi and the chirabhasa, the so-called reflection of consciousness, differentiating the sakshi from the three bodies, the subtle body, the physical body, the subtle body, the karna sharira, having done that discrimination, and then brantin ujjitva, another past passive participle, indeclinable past participle, and then having abandoned or let go of the delusion, the branti, the air. Branti is air or delusion. The delusion here, it's kind of a strong word. It means the air that is such a strong air that's delusional. You know, when you take the Atma, when you take yourself to be this physical body, or you, there's a total anyonya adhyasa, there's a total mutual superimposition there. That's delusional, in the sense that the Atma, yourself, the sakshi, is not that. Never has been. Never goes through any type of modification, even in your own immediate experience. Once it's pointed out to you, you'll say, oh, well, yes, I see that. But until that viveka, that discrimination is done, there's a bhranti there, an error, that is so strong that there's a total identification in the form of I am that. In fact, this I am that is what we call the ahankara. The ahankara sometimes translates just as I notion. And what we mean by I notion, instead of ego, ego is a more psychological term. So we don't, sometimes if we were to use ego in teaching Vedanta, we really would have to redefine it so that you would understand what that term would mean. So sometimes in the translations they'll use that term for ahankara, ego. Then you have to understand what it means. For us, the ahankara, kara means the making of an I. Aham means I, so the ahamkara, making an I, so we say I notion. What we mean by that is that when you say the word I, just like if I say the word pot, if I say the word I, it is actually referring to something, right? Like all words. All words are referring to something. They have what we call a vishaya. There's a subject matter, or a thing, or a vastu, an object of some kind that the word is referring to, even a concept. Every word refers to something. So when you say the word I, it's referring to you. Now, who are you? This is the question. So what it's referring to is you, and we could all probably agree across the board with this. It's referring to me, who am a conscious, existent being. So far, so good. And I would say, yes, I am conscious. Yes, I exist. I am a conscious entity. I am a conscious being. So the I is referring to this conscious being that I am. So whatever I mean in terms of my own essence and my own meanness, that's what I mean by the word I. But what makes the I, this word, aham, which means I, and ahankara, is that this I, instead of just referring to the consciousness, for me that I am in actuality, which is Satchitananda, which is Brahman, which is the consciousness, which is changed, my being is changeless and limitless, that's my true nature. It's referring to the conscious, existent reality of my true nature and identifying with it, identifying it with the physical body, or with the mind, or with the sense organs, or anything that I call an upadhi. An upadhi means that which lends itself to this mistaken notion. Like, I can take myself to be the body, so the body becomes an upadhi for me, because it allows, it lends itself to this mutual superimposition that we call in yoga adhyasa. So that's what makes it an upadhi. My mind is an upadhi, because I take myself to be the mind, the emotions of the mind, the level of the intelligence or stupidity of the mind, whatever it may be. Sense organs also, in the sense of, these are my eyes, I am a seer, I am a hearer, I am a taster, I am a toucher, you know, I am a smeller. All of the five sense organs I identify with as I am one who has that capacity. If I have that capacity, then I have a relationship that's part of me. Smelling, seeing is part of the eye. I am a seer, you see? So the sense organs also are upadhis. My emotions that are part of the mind, the manas, they're upadhis, because I can say, you know, I'm upset, I am happy, I am whatever, agitated, angry, joyous, whatever the emotions are. There's a point of identification. That point, that which lends itself to the identification is an upadhi. And what is the... what do we call that one who has made the identification? Is the ahankara, the I notion. It's a notional, I. Half of the ahankara is right, because the conscious being that is me is the truth. But we have identified that truth with the body, mind, sense organs, and that's what creates all of the problem. Right? Because then I take on what we call the gunas, or the qualities of the upadhi, right? And those qualities are always changing. They're all bound by time. They're all subject to death. There's no constant there. And so it's subject to limitation. So the ahankara is what takes what is actually a limitless, changeless being, me, and identifies it with what is limited and changing. And they call this, so this identification that create this creation of the ahankara, which has its roots, its cause in ajnanam, in ignorance, self-ignorance. Because if you knew yourself, the ahankara is going to be sitting, the I is going to be sitting with the self. It's not going to be lassoed or tied up with the upadhi. So that's why they call this ahankara the hridaya granthihi, which is a nice term. It means the knot of the heart. People probably heard this in some form. Hridaya means heart, granthihi means knot, the knot of the heart. The knot of the heart is that ajnanam, that ignorance, which has caused me to take my changeless, limitless self, this me that has never fluctuated or changed in any way, that is infinite wholeness, fullness, completeness, and identify it with, that's the lasso, that's the knot, identify it with the upadhi, the body, mind, sense organs. And so now, in all of this section here, Vidyaranya has been meticulously doing a viveka, a discrimination, between the three bodies, the physical body, which we call stula sharira. Stula means gross or physical, sharira means body, so the stula sharira, the sukshma sharira, the subtle body, karana sharira, the causal body, so these are the three major upadhis. And then the reflection of consciousness in all of these that can allow you to say, I am a knower, I am a seer, I am this physical body, I am my mind. That reflection of consciousness that allows consciousness to as though become a knower, a seer, a doer, an enjoyer, right? That's what we call the chittabhasa. All of these verses, Vidyaranya has been doing a discrimination to make you recognize the sakshi was ultimately just the pure, stable consciousness that is me. When you say, I am me, that one who is always there, the one who is always there present to every experience you have, and it's the same one who's present. It's not like you say, and this is the stability of the Atma. It's not like you say, I am happy now, but yesterday somebody was sad. It's I, the one, am experiencing this shanti at the moment. This I was sad yesterday. I am having this thought. A minute ago, I had this thought. The same person we're talking about. But the experiences go on changing. What we need to recognize is the nature of the person who isn't changing, the person who, the one person, the one me, who is the same me in the whole gamut of every experience I've ever had from birth to death and beyond that. But for now, we can just be satisfied with that. Whatever experience you've ever had, I am the one that illumines and is the self of that experience. That one is the same. It's not somebody else. And that's the important thing. Think about this. If my old clay pot example. If I have a clay pot, say I have a lump of clay, and I make that clay into a pot, right? The pot is now existing. Right? It's come into being. It's really totally dependent for its reality on the clay, but the pot has come into being now. So we have a pot. What if I squash it and make it into a plate? The plate can't say, I was a pot, and now I'm a plate. The plate can't say that. Only the clay can say that, right? Not the plate. The plate wasn't there before. And when the pot comes to an end, it's no longer there. So it can't, the pot's dead, it's gone, it's long gone. Now the plate's there. See what I'm saying? So neither one of those can make a statement. They're gone. But the clay can easily say that. I was a pot, now I'm a plate. Now I think I'll go back to being a lump. You know? There's no modification in the clay. So in your own experience, this is what has to be discovered. You have to discover the one who's not modifying, not going through any modification whatsoever. It is that one that says, I had this experience, then I had this experience, then I had this experience, and this happened, and that happened, and this happened, and that happened. There's one being there that is the constant. That being needs to be differentiated. So all of these verses have been going into this process of differentiation. It's a differentiation of what is actually here, a recognition of yourself that requires you differentiating yourself from the experiences that come and go. That's the task. So now he says, vivitya, having done that differentiation, then brantim ujjitva. Then giving up, having done the differentiation, then letting go the error. If you do the differentiation, then the error, you're no longer identifying with the error. The delusion in the sense of how strong that identification is, that erroneous identification. So having letting go of that, then it says, swam api aganiyan. And then even aganiyan is the present participle. And even no longer counting or regarding one's own self. And now what they mean by that, even the chittabhasa is given up. Right? Because look at how it goes. Here I say, I recognize, I do the viveka, the discrimination between being, my sat-chit, the conscious being that I am, and this physical body. Now my mind is doing that differentiation. And now my mind can even say, and very accurately, truly, make a true statement, you know, that I am referring to the Atma, to the self. The mind can say, I am the conscious being, referring to the Atma. I am the conscious being. And this body, mind, sense organs are mitya. I mean, they depend upon me for their reality, for their self. But they in no way bring about any type of modification or change in me at all. The mind can say this. But when, this is the mind that has knowledge. Now, when the mind is saying this, and it can say, I know this, I'm very clear about this, this all makes complete sense to me, I have aparoksha jnanam, I've got direct immediate knowledge of this, I have clarity. Now, But involved in that clarity is the recognition that the one who's talking and having this recognition of differentiation, the Chittabhasa, is also nitya. So we can recognize that the Chittabhasa itself, the mind, the ahankara, the I notion, the knowership that is dependent upon the mind, the perceptions that are dependent upon the mind and the sense organs, all of these also are mithya. So the very one who is talking is illumined by the silent conscious being, which is myself. The very one that has knowledge, the jnani as opposed to the ajnani. Jnani means the one who has knowledge and the ajnani. The jnani is as mithya as the ajnani. Right? All belong to the creation. And so here, having done the discrimination, recognizing the changelessness of myself as consciousness, that I in fact am not a knower, I am not an enjoyer, I am changeless, still, silent being. Recognizing myself as that, then the Chittabhasa itself, the one who enjoys knowership. Like right now, I'm knowing all of you, you're knowing me, we're knowing each other, we're experiencing the room. Right? There's a knowership there. But that knowership is mithya. It's dependent upon the mind and the sense organs. You know? That's what allows the knowership to take place, know or know. So that is also differentiated. So it says, you know, having done this viveka and, you know, given up the bhranti, given up the error, and then even discounting, aganiyan means even discounting one's own self as the Chittabhasa, the one who's talking away here, right? Then having done all that, then he says, then chintiyan sakshi, then contemplating always. Chintiyan means contemplating on thinking about being absorbed in the sakshi means the mind, the Chittabhasa itself is recognizing the truth of my being that is illuminating the Chittabhasa, illuminating all of the upadis, right? So the mind resting and enjoying myself, reveling in myself, circling around myself, sitting and appreciating the sat-chit of my being, so chintiyam sakshinam, right? Appreciating myself as the sakshi. Kasmat shariram anusanchurate. For what reason would such a person be concerned or worried about or take on the ills of the upadis, the bodies? It's not at all, it's not to say that the physical body, and early in the verses he went through what type of problems, the fevers, the jwaras, the nusenshwarate, what type of fevers follow the physical body or associated with the physical body? Well, as they say it in Ayurvedic terms, the ones that go with the three humors, the wind, the bile, the phlegm, and all of the diseases that come out of that. In Ayurvedic terms. So all of the diseases that the body can suffer, it's not that it's not going to suffer these diseases. At some point, it's going to drop dead. So it's got to go through a process. nothing we can do. It will go through its process of degeneration and go through suffering. That's just the nature of the body. In fact, Vidyarani says if you try to take that away from the body, there's no body left. It's not as though this body isn't always continually trying to balance these three, the Ayurvedic humors, these three things. So that's a fact of the physical body. Why am I going to concern myself about that in terms of I can't make that different, I can take care of the body and do my best for it. But that's not happening to me. That's what's happening to the body. And I have to care for the body. It's under my charge, so to speak. I care for the body. But that's not what's happening to me. Now, the ills for the sukshma sharira, the subtle body, those ills have to do with the negative spectrum of emotion, kama, krodha, the desires and angers and agitations, the whole negative spectrum of the emotions, which make me uncomfortable, make anybody uncomfortable. You always want to somehow resolve those or hold them in such a way that they'll give up their pain. You know, so those are the ills of the sukshma sharir, the subtle body, along with the lack of the positive things, like the lack of shanti, the lack of peacefulness, the lack of dhamma, he says. So it's the presence of the painful ones and the lack of the positive ones. So the lack of ananda, the lack of happiness, the lack of feelings of wholeness, and the positive emotions that make me feel, you know, from a samsari standpoint, in terms of just the state of mind, make me feel all is well with me, you know. Those could be a lack of those emotions. That's a fever. Oh my gosh, I'm not feeling happy, you know? Or, oh, I'm feeling so agitated, so angry, you know, so hurt. So this is the mind. And so if I'm identified with that, I'm just being dragged around a samsara from one emotion to another, to another, to another. And once in a while, I get a breather. You know? So, why would somebody who's done this viveka, right, put their energy there? If you take away those, all of those, the spectrum of emotions of the mind, there is no mind. You're taking away what is intrinsic to it. That's what he's trying to say. Take away the illnesses from the body, you don't have a body then. You take away all of the emotions from the mind, and you don't have a mind. The mind has all of these things. You know, and so, why would you become feverish over that when it is not you, in fact? That's not happening to you. And that's aparoksha. That is something. Aparoksha means that becomes very obvious to you once you've made the differentiation. And so here he says, in this kasmat shariram anusanchvare, he's talking about the last line of the verse, right? For whose sake and for why, of the verse 1 that this chapter 7 is an expansion of. At the second line of that book, verse says, for whose sake, for desiring what and for whose sake, with such a person who has recognized, you know, aham brahmasmi, who has recognized the infinite still nature of my being, then for why would they take on all of the ills of the body? Okay.
Do you want some water?
I'm fine. I'm good, thanks. So, let's do the next verse. Ayata vastu sarapadi, ayata vastu sarapadi, jnanam hetu palayane, jnanam hetu palayane, rajujnane hidhi dvastau, rajujnane hidhi dvastau. Kritamapyanusochati. So he goes on. He gives an example now. He says, ayata vastu sarpa adi jnanam hetuhu palayane raju jnane ahi dhi dvastal kritam api anusochati. He says, ayata vastu sarapadi jnanam. Jnanam means the cognition, a cognition. Jnanam can mean knowledge. It can also just mean a cognition, means a vritti. Any vritti, any cognition is called jnanam. Okay? So a cognition such as sarapadi, such as a snake, ayata vastu, which is not what is really there. Vastu means the real thing, is ayata, not that. The ayata vastu is not a sarpa, is not a snake. So the cognition of a snake, etc., I'll give some of the other examples in a minute for the etc. The cognition of a snake, etc., which is not what is really there. Okay, that cognition, hetuhu, is the cause for palayane, for running away. Right? Person sees a snake, They're startled, they run away. But that cognition of the snake is an ayatavastu. It's a cognition of a snake which is not actually there. But that jnana, that cognition, is the cause for the running away. Running away means the reaction, right? Could be. Sometimes we'll go on and on about it. Like you could brush up against that so-called snake, which is actually a rope. You brush up against it, and now you've been bit by the snake. Now you're rolling around on the ground. You're going to die. So this Swamiji goes on and on with these stories. So now this is the cause for the running away. Then he says, Raju jnane. But when there is the cognition, the knowledge of the rope, then what? Ahi di dvastau says, when there is the dvasti, dvasti means the destruction. When there is the destruction of the di, means the buddhi, the cognition of the ahi is snake. Another word for sarpa is ahi. So when there is the destruction of the cognition of the snake, upon the cognition, the knowledge of the rope. So when one sees the rope, the snake's gone. So that vritti has been destroyed, right? The cognition is no longer there. Now you see the rope. You don't see the snake anymore. So once the cognition of the snake is destroyed by the cognition of the rope, then that which was the cause for the running away is no longer there. Because the running away was due to the seeing the snake, not to seeing the rope. When you see the rope, then that behavior that was associated with the snake is no longer appropriate. And so it being so no longer appropriate, he says, kritamapi anusochati. The person who saw, the one who saw the snake, kind of feels a little, anusochati means he kind of feels sorry or regrets even what he did. In other words, kritamapi, even what was done, what they mean is, all of that time and all that energy, all of those emotions that he had spent were in reference to something that was not really there. Mm-hmm. Right? And so he feels a little grieves over how his whole life that had been generated by the snake, right? So the kritamapi, even for what he had done, this even for what he had done, there's a little kind of grief or remorse, because you had been living in a delusional world, I suppose, right? Because all of that energy, all of that worry, you know, because there was a lot of worry over the snake, a lot of grief over the snake. But then when you see there's no snake there, then there's maybe, you know, some grief for wasted time, wasted sorrow, you know, wasted upset, all for naught. So that's how he says it. Even for everything that he did, there's some, you know, little regret there. Of course, it's better to finally see the rope than not see it at all. I'd rather have the regret. If I have to have regret, let me have the regret. Just give me the rope. I'll take the regret with the rope. Yeah. Okay, so that's that verse. Let's go on. Mithya biyoga doshasya prayas chitta prasiddhaye prayas chitta prasiddhaye kshamapayan ivatmanam sakshinam sharanam gataha sakshinam sharanam gataha. So he's going on to this predicament, this person now who's let go of this ajnanam, this ignorance. He says, mithya abhiyoga doshasya prayas chitta prasiddhaye kshamapayan eva atmanam sakshinam sharanam gataha. He says that mithya abhiyoga dosha. Dosha means like an error, defect is a dosha, right? What's the dosha here? is the mithya abiyoga. It's your being so intent or attached to or so engaged and so involved in what is actually mithya. And your whole commitment, your abiyoga, the whole commitment, the intent, the energy, everything that's all abiyoga. Everything that, all of that energy and intention has been toward what is actually mithya, what has no being of its own. What is like the dream, actually, which has no reality apart from the satyam, right? And which is in which is has you for itself, but which yourself is completely free of, right? What is not so in the end, it is not you. In fact, when we break down the etymology of maya, which is responsible for the mithya, all of the manifestations of names and forms, if you break down that etymology, it's yama iti maya. That which is not is maya. Ya means that which is, ma not. Yama iti, thus that is maya. That which is not, that is maya. So what they mean is, well, here it is. We don't say that which is not in terms of non-existence because we experience it. So it's not the non-existence of a horn of a rabbit or a city in the sky. But if the non-existent, maya is non-existent in the sense that it itself it does not have existence. The existence which it has is actually the Atma. Like the pot does not have existence at all from its own standpoint. Its existence is only the clay, right? From its own standpoint, yama iti maya, right? And it's only the pot that is maya. In the clay pot example, the only thing in the clay pot that is maya is the pot. The only thing that is mithya in the clay pot example is the pot, right? The pot form, yama iti maya, the pot form, has nothing to offer of in terms of its own being or existence. There's only advaita. There's only one thing there. That's the clay. The clay is the satyam. The clay is the reality. The pot, for all practical purposes, isn't there. You can even say, just in vyavahara, just empirical reality, you can say, see this pot? Is there a pot? Is there a pot here, or is there clay? Or is there a pot and clay? Is there a pot? Or is there clay? Is there a pot and clay? Or is there only clay? There's all kinds of different levels of reality here, but in the end, because there is a pot. Pot is useful. We can pour water into it and all of that. That's vyavahara. Mithya is useful. We're not saying it's not useful. We're not saying it doesn't have an objective reality. We can all use the pot, etc. But when we want to know what is actually there, we can say, there is only clay. There is no pot, really. That's the yama iti maya. There really is only clay. So here, this is the situation. Really, there is only me. Really, there is only me, the Atma, the Satchitananda. That is the Satyam. All of this that we experience has no being of its own. It's just like, it's so easy to understand this. If you just look at it in terms of your own mind, if I ask you to imagine a meadow, and you imagine the meadow, and you have people walking in the meadow, it's beautiful, vivid imagination. And then if I say the yama iti maya in reference to the meadow, you'll say, yeah, that's true. Because the meadow is only there. It only has being as long as I allow it to have being. This is just from the standpoint of my mind. I can withdraw the meadow at any time. It has no independent existence. Right? I can't withdraw my awareness. I cannot withdraw existence. The Satchit, try to withdraw it. Try to change it. Try to do anything with it. You can't touch it. But any vritti, any experience, any, without exception, you can withdraw, you can change, you can look away from, and even if you don't, it will leave. Even if you don't get rid of it, it'll get rid of itself. That's maya. It has no substance of its own. So it's easy and useful for you to just play with your own thoughts, with dreams, with imaginations, to see the relationship of Maya, because what Ishvara has on a total level, so we call the Samashti Upadi. Samashti means the whole. Samashti Maya Upadi is Ishvara. He has the total Maya, the manifestation of this creation, the total Maya. And that total Maya is Mithya. It has the Satchit being for its Satyam, for its truth. But you have at your disposal Maya, also the same creative capacity, but in a limited way. That's why you can also create a creation. You can also, you have imagination. You can dream. And that's an incredible thing that we are able to do. You know, to be able to imagine. Even do things like work with your imagination and do active imagination where you can go into imaginal worlds. Or even with upasana, where you imagine the form of a deity, of a murti, and can hold that creation of the murti, of the form of the deity in your mind, you know, to the point that if you do upasana on it, to where the only thing that exists in your experience is the form of that deity. That's our limited capacity of Maya, because we have Maya at our disposal. But because you have Maya at your disposal, because you have imagination, because you have dream, because you have thoughts, you can understand the relationship between yourself, the conscious being that you are, and this creative capacity. That it is totally dependent on you for its being, that you are not dependent on it. You can project that dream or image, hold it and resolve it as you wish. You cannot do that for yourself. You can't project, sustain, and withdraw consciousness. You can't project, sustain, and withdraw existence. You can project, sustain, and withdraw knowership, because for knowership you need the mithya. For knowership, you need your mind. You need your sense organs. You know, you can withdraw your mind, and then even in deep sleep, there's no knowership. There's no enjoyership. There's no subject-object. But try to withdraw me, your own sense of self. Try to change it. You can't. One of your best meditations is the meditation on non-existence. To try to just imagine. Use your mind to imagine non-existence. To imagine myself as non-existent, as nothing. That's a really good meditation, because you can erase from your experience everything that can be erased, which is the mithya. What will be left is you, the Satchit. You without the mithya. Right? You without the names and forms. You can erase the names and forms. You can make them not exist. The Satyam you cannot make non-exist. And so here, so in this verse he says, for this dosha, like I've committed a dosha, you know, this is for this dosha of being so committed to this mithya. So my whole life has been, you know, totally engaged in this mithya, totally engaged in the snake. So he says, in order to prayaschitta prasiddhiye, here just prasiddhi, here just means siddha. It means to accomplish this prayaschitta. Prayaschitta is in India, when you do prayaschitta karmas, you do those to make up for papas or for mistakes. Like if I were to do some mistake, then I would do a prayaschitta karma in order to neutralize the mistake. That's what they're karmas that you do to neutralize other karmas that were problematic. Okay? And so now here, in order to do a prayaschitta karma to neutralize this dosha, which was my total commitment to samsara, right, to mithya, and he says, Shamapayan Eva Atmanam Sakshinam Shadanam Gata. He says, that person, the person who's the jnani now, seeks, Sharanam Gataha means to seek the protection, seeks refuge. Seeks refuge in the Atma, goes to the Atma, to the self, for Shadanam, for protection, for refuge. The Atma, which is the Sakshi. Sakshi means if you go to that which is the ultimate pratyagatma, the consciousness which cannot be objectified. Everything else has been objectified. The witness cannot be objectified. But the witness itself resolves into consciousness once you get rid of all of the things that have been objectified. In other words, I could say I'm a witness in reference to a sakshi, in reference to a thought in my mind. But if the thought in my mind is not me, because it's objectified and it comes and goes, and consciousness remains, if I remove the thought, then I recognize, I say, then is the, what I call the sakshi a witness, witnessing anything? Consciousness is not a witness in terms of an activity. It's not for, it is not doing the activity of witnessing. Like, here's my mind, consciousness is saying, let me witness my mind. It's like the sun saying, let me illumine the earth. The earth is illumined because the sun is luminous. So we can say, look at the sun is shining on the earth. It's a question, is the sun shining on the earth? Is the sun doing the act of lighting up the earth? Where it's, is it saying, let me light up the earth? Let me shine upon the earth. No. The sun is luminous, so whatever is in its field is illumined. The sun's not doing anything. It is that luminosity, so whatever is in its field is illumined. So like that, what I call the sakshi, to differentiate it from what is illumined, when I look at it from its own right, it's not witnessing anything. Sakshi means, translates as witness. It's not witnessing anything. It is the very being, my being, because of my being, everything is illumined. So when I use the word sakshi to differentiate. So here what he says is, you know, doing this as though for the sake of this prayaschitta to kind of neutralize and make up for all of this total commitment to the mitya, which has been my life up to this time, the samsara, the jnani, seeks now the protection, the refuge in the Atma, which is the sakshi, kshamapayan, as though begging pardon, like saying to the Atma, kshamapayan means actually like to beg forgiveness or beg pardon. It's like saying, excuse me, sorry. So then, that, with that kind of attitude, then stays home, comes home, and just is so happy to be there. So that's Vijayavanya. He's just going to say, let's see the next one.
I like him.
Me too. Though he's kind of strange sometimes. But anyways. Avritta papa nityaratam. Avritta papa nityaratam. Snanadi. Snanadya varityate yata, snanadya varityate yata, avartayan nivat dhyanam, avartayan nivat dhyanam, sadasakshi parayanaha, sadasakshi parayanaha, avritta papa nuti artam, snana adya avartayate yata. Avartayan iva dhyanam sada sakshi parayanaha. Now he gives an example. A couple of examples. He says, avrita. The word avrita means something which is repeating or cyclical. It means it comes around again and again and again. is avritta, like a cycle, or just something cyclical, something that's repeating itself, or just comes back again and again. It comes, circles around. So he says, see, this is what he says. He says, avritta papa nuti artam. For the sake of, nuti means to remove or to drive away. So for the sake of removing or driving away these papas, sins, which come again and again. It's not like I do some papa karma, and that's it. I do this papa karma, I do some sort of prayaschitta karma to neutralize it, and then another papa comes. I do something else. And again, I have to do a prayaschitta karma in order to neutralize that. So it just goes on and on like that. So he says, for the sake of removing these papas, which continue to show up, snanadi avartite yata. So he says, just as for the sake of removing these papas, which keep coming in one form or another, I do again and again snanam, etc. Snanam means you take a bath, you know, and there's different rituals that you do, different, beginning with taking a bath, there's different rituals, prayers, and whatnot that you do in order to neutralize these papas, these papa karmas, these sins, you know, these adharmas. So the my little papas, they, or big, whatever, they keep coming, and so what do? Well, I just keep taking baths. You know, I keep doing the prayaschitta karmas in order to neutralize these papas, and it just goes on like that. Right? Doesn't stop. So he says, so like that, avartayan eva jhanam sada sakshi parayanaha. He says, like that, for the one who's parayana. Parayana means for that person, that is where their devotion is, their commitment is, their absorption. So the one whose commitment is the sakshi, is the atma. That is what is primary and the most important for them, is parayana for them. Okay? So for that person, they are always doing as though circling around again and again, always doing jhana. See, it says, avartayan eva, as though they're continually again and again and again, as though again and again and again doing jhana, doing contemplation, right? Who? They're on sada means they're always again and again doing the contemplation, right? On what? On the sakshi, on the atma. So the one for whom that their commitment is the atma, they're always bringing the mind back again and again and again to, in a sense, bathe in the atma. It's beautiful. I mean, to just absorb your mind, contemplate upon the atma. Just like a samsari is always taking a bath or doing different rituals, right, to neutralize the papa karmas, this person is always doing, the one who's committed to the atma is always again and again doing jhanam, bringing the mind back to the jhanam. And this all goes back, you know, this is kind of a story, and you have to take it from the previous verses. So he says, from the previous verse, the one who's always doing, you know, the prayaschitta karmas, for prayaschitta karmas, for their embarrassingly strong devotion to mithya. Now they're making up for that, you know, and as though saying to Bhagavan, to, you know, to the atma, pardon me, let me just come home to you. And then just like the one, the papa, the one who's, you know, doing prayaschittas for these papa karmas again and again and again, this person is again and again and again doing jhanam, resolving the mind into the atma. Mm-hmm. Pardon me, how did I get lost out there? That's his idea. Kind of nice humor. Now let's do one more example. He gets more than one more example, but we'll do one more example. Be fast. Upastakushtini vesha vilaseshu vilajjate. Vilaseshu vilajjate Jnanato gre tata bhasaha. Jnanato gre tata bhasaha. Swaprakhyatau vilajjate. Swaprakhyatau vilajjate. Upasta kushtini vesha. Vilaseshi vilajjate. Jnanataha agre tata abhasaha. Swa prakhyatau vilajjate.
This is a really funny verse.
It says, Evesha is a prostitute.
Gosh.
So it says, a prostitute whose upasta are the, especially female genitals, kushtini, the prostitute who is an upasta kushtini means her genitals are diseased with leprosy. Kushtini means it's the feminine from kushtin. It's been one who is diseased with leprosy is a kushtin. Mm-hmm. Kushtini is a feminine. Vesha is feminine for a harlot or prostitute. So a vesha whose genitals are diseased with leprosy. How she is vilajjate, kind of shy and ashamed in regarding her charming flirtations. Vilasas are sexual flirtations, like sexual advancements and come-ons, and, you know, put her in the eyes and all this kind of stuff, you know, charms. Sexual, trying to charm you sexually. So how she is, would feel kind of embarrassed or shy or shamed in terms of her making these sexual come-ons, advances, to who? In Janataha Agre, in front of someone who knows that she has leprosy, that she has this problem. So agre means in the presence of, in front of, Janata has somebody who knows this. She is not going to feel like coming on to them sexually, charming them with her sexual charms to win them over. She would not feel like doing that. Tata, similarly. Okay.
What happens?
You know, yeah.
Swamiji won't do these verses. He'll just go. It'll just be too much.
It
goes against his sensibilities. But anyway, I can do it. So similarly, abhasaha. The abhasa means the chirabhasa, the one who is mitya. You know, the one who is all of a lifetime taken, you know, itself to be me, to be the self, right? So that chitta, similarly, the chitta bhasa is shy, feels shy, ashamed, kind of, to swaprakhyatau, means it feels shy in reference to a bragging about itself or putting forward all of its great qualities and, you know, how wonderful it is to brag about. It feels a little shy to be bragging about all of its wonderful qualities. So just like the the poor harlot. That's a good place to quit. We can contemplate on that now. The idea though is that person, that chidabhasa, is mithya. There's nothing there to brag about. Not that, now, I'll just say a couple of words about this, because it's not really because that the chidabhasa is like a harlot. But it's like how the harlot would definitely not want to do that. Would not feel at all like flirting in that kind of condition. The chidabhasa, once it's totally recognized, it's mityatva one. But it's more than that. It also sees itself as part of Ishvara. Mm-hmm. I mean, what is actually here is Ishvara. This body, mind, sense organs, is part and parcel of Bhagavan. And the self, the Atma, is the self of Ishvara. This self that I am is the self of the whole. And, you know, and here this Chidabhasa, that is just part and parcel of the body, it's like the cell, a cell in the physical body, thinking that it is the great one. You know, the cell in the physical body is part and parcel of the whole, is taken care of by the whole, is part of, is totally handled by the laws of the whole, is part and parcel of the whole body. This Chidabhasa, the body, mind, sense organs, the three shariras, all of the upadis, all of these points of identification, this whole thing is part of Bhagavan. And so the one who really is deserving of the glory is the whole, which is an expression of the self, you know? And so when the Chidabhasa is saying, I am really something here, you know? Even in terms of an exalted Chidabhasa, you know, that has all kinds of what we call all kinds of vibhutis. Vibhuti means all kinds of glories, like maybe you have a physically beautiful body with a beautiful singing voice and a high IQ and, you know, all and good qualities in terms of compassion and kindness.
Movie star.
Or, you know, a Dalai Lama type. Somebody who has beautiful, beautiful qualities, mm-hmm. beautiful body, beautiful singing voice, beautiful, beautiful, all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. That is what in the Gita will say, this is one of Ishwar's vibhutis. Mm-hmm. This person is one of Ishwar's vibhutis. One of Ishwar's glories, Lord's glories. Like the Himalayas, like the Ganga, mm-hmm. you know. So all in the whole creation, there are certain things that stand out. They're like stand out like jewels, but these are Ishwar's jewels. These are the jewels of Ishwar. They don't belong to. There is no individual that they belong to. If they belong to anyone, they're Ishwar's vibhutis. And so the one who knows that doesn't feel kind of silly, you know. It would like be going back into a state of ajnanam to tout your own glories when you know that that isn't the case. That what would make you tout your own glories is your ajnanam. You would be exposing your ajnanam. Your leprosy is your ajnanam. Okay. That's interesting. Okay, let's take a moment. Om Purnamadav Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha Hari Om
No, I was curious of why they so often say that you should continually think of Atma, or think of, or resolve the mind back into the self. It's almost like it's a job for the Jivan Mukta. Is it?
Well, the Jivan Mukta, it's natural.
Yeah, well, okay.
So you don't think about resolving the mind into the self because there's only the self there. In other words, the Satyam Nitya is clear. Mm-hmm. So clear that you're not going to miss the clay. Mm-hmm. Right? But initially, as one gains this knowledge, the mind is so habitually, for lifetimes, conditioned to being overly engaged, this mithya abhiyoga, right? This commitment to the mithya, it's not its fault. It didn't know there was no differentiation with the satyam. And so the commitment has only been, to what's mithya, to all of the nama rupas in one form or another, whatever strikes me as something that could make me happy is what it amounts to. And so, since the mind is so conditioned to that, it is brought back. You just keep it, you bring it back, not as though that's a physical act, It's not a physical act. It's an act of knowledge, of remembrance. Just bringing the mind, just through the act of remembrance of who you are. Because you know who you are. But the mind tends to get lost for a while. That's why Nididhyasana is so, contemplation is so helpful, because it slows everything down and gives you a time for the mind just to sit with yourself, right? To sit with your knowledge, to bask in your knowledge. So then it's when you're doing that, you're breaking this conditioning.
Well, the vision then becomes more like a habit than, as opposed to if you do.
I wouldn't say that, because what happens is the habitual behavior of the mind that is based upon ignorance, that habit is negated. Once the vision, the knowledge is there, that knowledge isn't a habit, it's firm. Right? But the mind will always come back to that. So what you're doing is removing the ajnanam and the habits that are born of ajnanam.
That was really an amazing that impression that class had on my mind. How I get how revolting it is to praise oneself. I mean, go against the values. The value, it brings home the value of values. It's amazing how it just kind of wants some every now and then it. Comes a little clearer.
Amani Twam Adambi Twam. In chapter 13, the book, Swamiji's book, The Value of Values, that's a must have. Mm-hmm. If you guys don't have it, I don't know if I have any copies, but I'll try to get some for you. Who doesn't have that book? You don't have that book? 4, 5. It's a good, really good book. It's one of the better books. Even at CIS, I give it to all my students in some of the classes. Just because he goes through in chapter 13, there's, I think it's maybe verse 5 to 12 or something in chapter 13. It goes through all of the values that are natural to a Jivan Mukta. Well, in this book, he just goes through them one by one and one, and then in such a way that it gives you a value for the value. You say, oh, that's why that's so important to my Shanti. Mm-hmm. That's the thing.
The prayas chitta karmas.
Prayas chitta karmas.
Those are done to neutralize.
In the Vedic world, there's different kinds of karmas. There's the nitya karmas, naimittika karmas. Then there's the what's the name for the negative karmas? Can't think of it right now. But prayas chitta karmas are the karmas that neutralize the papa karmas. Right, so there's particular types of rituals, types of prayers, types of activities, snanam, bath and chants and whatnot, or certain prayas chittas.
Is that what's the karma kanda?
Yeah, so it's a technical term from the karma kanda. Prayaschitta karmas are karmas that are meant to neutralize papa karmas. Swamiji's used the example for prayaschitta karmas as if you, say if you have a missile, say Russia has sent a missile over and it's going to land at the United States, and so the United States sends up another missile to knock that missile down. Mm-hmm. That's the prayaschitta karma. Mm-hmm. Right? So it neutralizes the karma that's already been set into effect. That's the idea.
So taking 5 baths a day is neutralize.
Well, Snanam, he'll go on in the next verse, actually. Like, say, there is, say for the Brahmins, the Brahmin lady, and it's true for the men also, but I know more about the rituals for the women. She, you know, will wash her saris and clothes, and they hang them out on the line, stretch them out on the line to dry. And then in the morning, they'll take their bath and then put on these fresh, clean clothes. But now, once those fresh, clean clothes are put on, nobody's to touch her. If they touch her, then she has to go take another bath. Then there's things like mlechas. Mlechas are the untouchables. You know, if a mlecha were to touch a Brahmin, then they have to go and purify themselves with baths and this and that. That's why in that Manasa Panchakam, remember when the chandala is like a mlecha, untouchable. Chandala means a dog eater, a person who eats dogs who's considered untouchable. So Shankara and his entourage of disciples and devotees, you know, students, were walking along a path one day, and comes to block their path is this kind of disgusting looking chandala. Okay. And Shankara just goes, gacha gacha. Gacha gacha means go, go. Move aside. Because if that chandala touches them, that dog eater, the Mlecha touches them, then they all have to go do these rituals and purify themselves. It's gacha gacha. But it just so happens that the dog eater, the chandala, happened to be Lord Shiva taking that form, mm-hmm. in order to have a little dialogue with Shankara. And so the Shiva, in the form of the chandala, says, who are you telling to go? Is it this body made of food that's supposed to leave that body made of food? And then he does a verse on that gives the vision. He gives a couple of verses. Shiva gives him a couple of verses that give the vision. And then Shankara pranams to him and says, anybody, whether it be a brahmana or a chandala, that who can teach me this, that person is my guru. And he gives 5 verses like that. It's kind of nice. But so anyway, there's bath and all kinds of things that are done to, as prayaschitta to karmas, to negative karmas.
And the prayaschitta, it takes a lot of effort. I mean, they're not, you can't just think.
Yeah, they're efforts, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so he's saying, you know, these prayaschittas, you just keep doing them, because you're always doing something that requires it.
End the cycle
of prayaschittas. But this person is doing as the prayaschitta, in a sense, you know, saying kshamapiyam, you know, as though, pardon me, my mind just went out and got engaged. Let's bring it back. So that's the jhanam. Mm-hmm. Continual recognition.
Yeah.
And for a jnani, for somebody who has some maturity in this knowledge, that continual jhanam means just the mind's continually resolving into the self, is a natural thing. You're out doing this, you're doing that, all the while yourself is there, aparoksha. But then also the mind is also doing its pranams.
I have a question about that. What is the engagement with the mitya? Because the mitya doesn't go away.
The mitya doesn't go away.
So that constant coming back, what is
the... You know, the engagement with this abhiyoga, this mitya abhiyoga, the engagement is this. I am the ahankara, I am this body, I am the karta bhokta, I am the doer, I am the enjoyer, I need this to be happy. The mitya becomes real over and over again. Mm-hmm. Right? And so when the kartritvam, the doership, the enjoyership is in force, which is actually when it's in force, that's brought about by a lack of vairagya. Lack of vairagya means a lack of dispassion toward a given thing. And that lack of that lack of vairagya or lack of dispassion toward a given thing means this. I need this to be in this way to be happy. You know, I need the creation, I need this person, I need this situation to be like this in order for me to be happy, which is total illusion. You know?
But isn't there still an engagement with the nitya in terms of experience? Like, take emotions.
Yes.
So we're humans. We have all of these experiences. Even if you're constantly bringing your attention back to the Atman, there's still some sort of engagement.
That's right. That's right.
Just not with attachment, right? Like, not with the I am that? Is that...
As long as you have this body-mind-sense organs, as long as you have prarabdha, those are the karmas that are living, that you're living out now, the karmas that caused you to take this birth, that will take you all the way through to your death. Okay? Those karmas you're living out, so you're totally engaged in the world. If you've got a body and a mind and sense organs, whether you have knowledge or not, you have a body, mind, sense organs, and they function, they are engaged in the world. Mm-hmm. But this mitya abhyoga is not that you're engaged in the world. You should be engaged in the world, or what... How could you not be? You have to be dead not to be. Right?
Well, there's that spiritual overhead thing where you're just constantly not engaging. You're just constantly coming back and sitting and not. I guess
I'm still
wondering about the engagement.
But that's more of a... Can be kind of the idea of a yogi where I have to actually withdraw from the world and keep my mind in meditation or something like that.
Right.
So that I'm actually trying to, in a sense, even though living, not living.
Right. So this is a drawing your mind, or bringing back to the Atma, but in engagement.
In engagement, completely like, engagement.
Right.
Because this is Ishvara. There's nothing, there's no reason for me to be in or out.
Right.
Because this is Ishvara. If the Satyam Mitya, I recognize all of this as my being, this body, mind, sense organs is part of it, part of my being. This is part of Ishvara. This is even another way to look at it in terms of prarabdha, your prarabdha karma, the karmas that are fructifying now in the form of your life. The prarabdha karma is not just your body and mind. The prarabdha karma is your situation. Right? So this, the whole situation that you find yourself in now, that is the prarabdha karma. This body is one part of that prarabdha karma, right? And so there's a knower known wholeness there to the prarabdha karma, and that wholeness of which you are a part is Ishvara. So you can look at just the Ishvaratvam, the nature of Ishvara, just in terms of the unfoldment of your individual prarabdha karma. And then, of course, that prarabdha karma is part of the whole creation also. So, but your immediate experience of Ishvara has to do with your prarabdha. And I say with your prarabdha because your prarabdha includes the totality of your experience, right? Which is limited compared, I mean, the totality of our experience as a jiva in this life is very limited. But this is our little portion of Ishvara that we're experiencing. And so you recognize that this body, mind, sense organs, chitta-abhasa, you know, is part and parcel of Bhagavan and Ishvara in terms of the experience of your life and all of the things that come your way. And so you are totally engaged. There's no reason not to be totally engaged. But is it an engagement from the standpoint of jnanam, knowledge, or is it the engagement of a samsari? If it's the engagement of a samsari, then there's no satyam mitya. Mm-hmm. I am this person who needs this in order to be happy. That's the template. It's what I call the desire template. I need this to be happy, or I need to get rid of this to be happy. That's the negative version. You go away and I'll be happy. This situation, goes away, then I can be happy. This situation or this person is with me, then I can be happy. But, it's so subtle. Then I need you to be with me so that I can be happy, but I need you to be with me in this way so that I can be happy. And I need you not to be like this so that I can be happy. And then I have to have this mood when I'm with you so that I can be happy when I'm, it's very complicated.
And it's always fleeting.
And it's always fleeting. It doesn't work. And it doesn't work. And finally you get exhausted. That's what makes a person a mumukshu. It's impossible. You burn out. You can't do it. It's not going to, you just see this isn't going to work. It's going to, because what you want is to be able to relax and just say it is fine. But you can't say it is fine and have it not be fine. The words have to be true. All is well with me. Creation as it is at Yudhishthira, it's fine. Because I don't need it to be different. Because my ananda is not dependent on it. That's why. If my wholeness is dependent on it, then it's a problem. Even a little bit. And it says that in the Taittiriya. Even if there's just a little tiny, tiny lesha, the littlest bit of dvaita, of duality.
Mm-hmm. What would that be?
There's fear.
Fear?
Any type, there comes fear.
Oh, yeah, but any type of separation. What would be that little speck?
Any time where I see that I need this, where I become a jiva in the creation who needs this to be a particular way, in order for me to be okay. Then as soon as that comes, in even the smallest little way, then there's fear because I can't control the universe. I can't control, what can you control? You can't really control anything. You might be able to have some control over your own mind, but even that, it's hard. So it has to be another overarching attitude and understanding that frees you. But the only thing that overarching attitude that gives you the freedom is not an attitude. It's an attitude which is based upon knowledge. The knowledge of that which is full and complete and not bound by change. So that you can't hurt it, you can't destroy it, you can't make it go away, it won't leave you. That's the nature of the Atman. Then you can relax. Otherwise, relaxation not allowed.
Carol, when you said that in the very beginning of the class, you said, I think you said something like the ahankara is the I am maker.
Oh, that's
it. I thought it meant I am the doer.
No, with the ahankara. The kara can come from the root kri.
Yeah.
So it means like making an I. We just say I notion.
It doesn't mean I am the one who's doing something.
No, that's the karta. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no.
Huh. I was wrong.
No.
No. So it's what makes the I. It's
the creation of the I.
Of the
based on
kara,
it. Kara comes from the root kri. It also means the form of the eye, but usually that's how we say it. It's not karta.
Uh-huh.
That would be that. For that we use karta.
Uh-huh.
Karta, kartra.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What does kata mean?
It comes from kri. It just means doing or making.
Changing?
Mm-hmm. Akata can also mean have the idea of form. The idea, just stick with I notion.
Yeah.
Because that's what it is. You're creating an I where an I is not.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. So the half of the ahankara is perfect. The set chit, the conscious being. Right? But then what the conscious being is superimposed on means that now you've created an I. This body is the I. The mind is the I. The sense organs are the I. So. I don't know where you... I haven't heard that, where you got there.
I don't know where I picked it up. But I really thought that's what it was. Well, because in some way, it's obviously the wrong understanding of the word, but it's because then they say the Atma's not a doer, a knower, an enjoyer.
But that's different.
Yes, but I thought that...
Karta Bhakti. We thought it because, legitimately, in a way, the root of karta is krit, to do.
Okay. Uh-huh.
The root of kara... is kriya, to do. Kara, karita, karma, all have the same roots. Karana, karana, karana.
Yeah. But it never means that.
Ahankara?
Yeah.
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
I haven't heard it.
You must know it.
You never know. Maybe there's something passed by me there. But as long as you understand what it means in terms of concept.
So then, just one other question is with the sakshi and all that.
Oh.
Like here, like, okay, so the sakshi dissolves into the self. And so then...
Well, you realize that the sakshi is the self.
The sakshi is the self, okay. But then when you say thoughts and mind are known.
Yeah.
Thoughts and mind are known. So then, that known, that's the Atma, right?
That's right. And we think always known implies a knower.
Right. So then when you... Okay, thoughts and the mind are known. So then you can say... I know the thoughts. But in a sense, when you say that, you're creating ahankara, correct? Because it's not really, I know the thoughts, it's just the thoughts are known, because known is the Atma.
Yeah, and that's the creates the chittabhasa also.
Oh.
Right? Because, see, any thought that you have has the sat-chit,
mm-hmm.
the conscious being,
yeah.
and the name and form.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, when the ahankara thought comes along, it's going to identify you with the consciousness
mm-hmm.
in reference to the thought. Mm-hmm. So that's where, for that we have the word know or known.
Mm-hmm.
The thought is known. I am the knower. Mm-hmm. And so this is just language, really.
Mm-hmm.
So the ahankara comes and identifies with the conscious aspect of the thought
mm-hmm.
and then relates the objects of the thought where there is no self-identity
mm-hmm.
as the known.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes a division there,
mm-hmm.
where actually there's just consciousness and mitya,
right.
the name and form.
Right.
But the ahankara can come
yeah.
and identifies with the conscious aspect
yeah.
of the vritti.
But not the name and form. Yeah.
No, because you don't have a, there's no sukshma sharira with a paint, with subtle body, you know, with a painting. So you have a vritti, a thought modification of the painting. The consciousness is there, the existence is there, so the painting enjoys existence and enjoys consciousness and the
yeah.
form of it is known.
Yeah.
But then the ahankara comes and says, well, I'm not the painting.
Right, right.
I'm the one who knows the painting.
So
I'm the consciousness.
So the ahankara is making this division,
mm-hmm.
which really isn't there. So.
That's right. That's how this chittabhasa is formed. There is no such division, really.
Right.
And there, even in your experience, there's no division.
Uh-huh.
Because if you start analyzing your experience, you cannot find the knower, because all the way in the analysis to the self, everything is just known.
Mm-hmm.
It's because everything is a manifestation of consciousness.
Yeah.
And consciousness is the knownness. Which everything enjoys. So if you got rid of all of the mitya, all of the names and forms, there's just known there, which is the self-luminosity
mm-hmm.
of consciousness.
Is
that's
that
what
that
we
manifest,
call known.
Is that that manifest knowledge everybody's talking about? Is that what Tsongzhi means?
Manifest knowledge, he's talking about the creation.
Not knownness then.
No, the knownness
mm-hmm.
is the consciousness, right? We say manifest knowledge because when you think of knowledge, any vritti, any thought that you have, it has a condition of being in the unconscious or in unmanifest condition, and then it comes into manifest. Like say, if I ask you to think of a pot, it was in the unmanifest because you weren't thinking of a pot. Now it comes into manifest condition, so it's manifest knowledge. So we look at the entire creation as infinite manifest knowledge. That means the entire creation is known.
Mm.
Why?
Mm.
Sat-chit, which consciousness, which is Brahman. So there's nothing that is not known because there's nothing that is not Brahman.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So this manifest knowledge, the mitya means the whole thing, shines. That's why we say Ishwara. Yeah. I left out a couple of little steps there.
I'm just
sorry.
You know, I don't know if any sense.
I didn't miss him.
The Ahamkara is mithya, and it's at the same level that everything else in the creation is mithya. There's no difference between Ahamkara being uniquely mithya, except that it is the basic ignorance that sets the whole thing.
Well, it's not even the basic ignorance. It's the result of the basic. It's the result of self-ignorance. Right? Mm-hmm. So it's the basic problem. Self-ignorance is the basic problem. And the Ahamkara is the effect of that problem. Because the Ahamkara then creates out of the ignorance, I am that. All of the anyonya, adhyasa, the mutual superimposition, all of that, because it's just a domino effect because of that self-ignorance. But the ahankara is the manifestation of that ignorance in reference to me. It's what creates the jiva. But it's all equally mithya. Only way we divide mithya up is in terms of vyavahara. There's Ishvara, which we say is Ishvara Srishti, the Lord's creation that is Vyavahara. And then there's Jiva Srishti, the Jiva's creation, which is Pratibhasika, means subjective. Seeing the snake, that's mithya, but it's my subjective projection. This creation is objective, but it's mithya. Anything within duality is mithya. Anything within time and space is mithya. See? Doesn't matter what it is. It can be the ahankara. It can be nirvikalpa samadhi. Mm-hmm. That's the Swamiji says in his Bhagavad Gita bhashyam, these verses that we're doing, he talks about nirvikalpa samadhi as the best that you can get. That's the best that you can do in samsara.
Yeah.
That's the best, that's the highest that mithya can give you. It's still mithya, it's still the antikarana. Mm-hmm. You know?
If you don't know the truth of that.
No, it's still mithya. Mm-hmm. That there's an antikarana, even whether there's knowledge or not knowledge,
mm-hmm.
It's still the antikarana itself, mm-hmm. in his mind, is mithya. Right? The only thing that's not mithya is the atma. Everything else is in reality only the self, like the pot is only the clay. But it's there to be accounted for. Here we are, you know. So accounting for it, we say it's mithya.
Wouldn't you say that nirvikalpa samadhi is identification with atma?
I would say nirvikalpa samadhi is when the mind resolves because of meditation, or even happens in the time of teaching also, but that causes a resolution of the mind. So that at that time there's no subject-object relationship being experienced. Mm-hmm. Right? Because the mind has for its is focused on the content. It's like the pot being focused on the clay. Then there's no subject which is different from the object, no object different from the subject, because the mind is totally resolved into the subject. So now there's no subject-object experience. So nirvikalpa means without vikalpa. Without subject-object differentiation, without duality. It's without duality. Nirvikalpa means without the vikalpa, the duality. So you say without vikalpa, without subject-object duality there. That's nirvikalpa. Savikalpa is when the mind is absorbed in the self, the subject of the mind is just the awareness, but the mind is still there. In fact, the mind is still aware that now, you know, I am totally absorbed in the self. It's like they use the example of, like, if you're looking at your face, you're looking at your face in a mirror, you can be aware of your face and the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
That's savikalpa.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to be looking at it and only aware of the face with the mirror totally going into the background, that's nirvikalpa. See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's just an example. Mm-hmm. This has to be in reference to the self, which is the subject. And so the object mind, the object in the mind,
mm-hmm.
is the subject. And so now there's no subject-object relationship. for there to be any experience of duality.
How would you say that in reference to Atma?
I just did. Say the consciousness, Atma, which is consciousness, is illumining a mind whose only focus is on the consciousness, which is the subject. So now you have the subject illumining a mind which has no other content but the subject. And so now there's no subject-object duality. That's nirvikalpa samadhi.
Right, and the word subject could be exchanged for Atma.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
Could it be used as a secondary sadhana?
Nirvikalpa?
Having the meditation that leads to that.
Yeah, that's nididhyasana. Mm-hmm. And we use the primary sadhanas. Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana. By primary sadhana, we call it Upayanishtha. It means these are the major sadhanas for actually gaining knowledge, self-knowledge. Because self-knowledge is moksha, is liberation. So that's why it's called primary sadhanas. Secondary sadhanas are for antakarana shuddhi, for the purity of mind, like karma yoga and all these things. But Shravana, which means exposing yourself to the teaching, the unfoldment of the Upanishads as a pramana, that exposure to the Upanishads that are taught as a pramana. Manana is getting rid of all of the different types of doubts that come in and say, well, why couldn't it be this way? Why couldn't it be that way? What about this? What about that? That manana. Resolving all of those doubts.
Like we're doing now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, well, there's a slight difference if you want to split hairs. Even when you're unfolding the Upanishad, you can have doubts that would say, does the Upanishad say this or that? That's not really manana if you split hairs.
Mm-hmm.
Manana is when you say, the Upanishad says this, but why couldn't it be like this? Questioning and bringing in something outside of the vision, like, say the Upanishads, you're clear that the Upanishad says, aham brahmasmi. That the vision of reality for all the Upanishads is advaita. You're clear, you know that. And you've done all kinds of so-called manana, questioning, trying to really understand what the Upanishad says. That all falls under shravana. If we're doing this, you know, parsing in this way. Then manana is when you understand what the Upanishad says, but then you say, yeah, but I think it should be like this. I think there shouldn't be just one Atma. Mm-hmm. I think there should be many Atmas.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the Prakriti that is, you know, responsible for this creation is its own existent entity and that there are many Atmas. Why couldn't it be like that?
Mm-hmm.
Or you could take a Buddhist view or a materialistic view, or you could say, they even have the Vaisheshikas, there are many paramanus, small little atoms that make up the creation. So this is manana, because then you say, well, why couldn't it be like that? Then there's an analysis of all of these different ideas of how it could possibly be. So that is manana. Nididhyasana is contemplation. Meditation. And that nididhyasana, which can be nirvikalpa samadhi, savikalpa samadhi, all of this, it's all absorption into this knowledge, sitting with this knowledge in contemplation. That is in order to neutralize the dehatma buddhi, the notion of the body being the atma. That's what it's for. You know, because you keep sitting with yourself, you keep recognizing that you're not the body in contemplation. You know, and you get more, you recognize Ishvara, you recognize the whole thing in contemplation. So contemplation is an important,
mm-hmm.
important part of it. Mm-hmm. But the contemplation, I also like to say also, the contemplation is something that happens throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
Every time
mm-hmm.
you bring your mind back to your knowledge and you see, Not just manana. Manana is more intellectual. Your mind has to understand. Shravana is it's seeing and understanding. Manana, seeing and understanding. You're getting rid of doubts. Nididhyasana is the vision itself, the recognition itself. So this happens at the time of teaching. It happens throughout the day. And it happens when you're sitting. So it's nice to take some time out of the day, in the morning or whatever, just so you can sit and be with yourself. You know? It straightens out. You get a good start on the day. It just sets everything right. You know? Kind of gets like giving the mind a bath.
Carol, can I ask you this? Those terms, nirvikalpa and selvikalpa, they don't come up, that's not Vedanta vocabulary. Like, does that come up anywhere in the Upanishads? That's really a yoga dungeon of vocabulary.
It is. It does come up, but not really. We use just nididhyasana, but the words do come up.
They do?
Yeah, but not... I know what you mean.
It's the Upanishads.
Well, no, I don't know if there's the words, which words are used in the Upanishads or in the Bhashas. I don't know about that.
They had... Those terms were used.
They'll be used in the tradition. You know, and we have ways of unfolding nirvikalpa and selvikalpa. But they don't have the same, they're not used in the same way as they are in the yoga tradition. Because in the yoga tradition...
Like that's the goal.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's used as a goal. So here
an
you have to understand...
An experiential goal.
Yeah, an experiential goal. Where here it's, instead of nirvikalpa or selvikalpa, we would use like akhanda akara vritti. You know, a vritti, a thought modification, which is non-dual. You know, so, and then we'll talk about nirvikalpa in reference to akhanda akara vritti. But akhanda akara vritti is what we use, it's more knowledge-oriented. Because even nirvikalpa or selvikalpa samadhi can be jada, means you can be inert, means not associated with knowledge. You could have a meditative experience, which is non-dual. You come back from that experience and you said, I just... had this, I want it again. You know, there's no idea that that's you. You know, even if you think it's you, then you say, "And I want to become that again." So, you know, so you know, you still are identified with the ahankara. I mean, with the mind. Stop. I have to